Welcome to the Developer Deep Dive Series, brought to you by Middletech and sponsored by the Awesome Inc. Developer Bootcamp. Throughout this series, we'll be getting an inside look at the technology that powers the most innovative companies in this region, as our host, Justin Hall, interviews the people behind the code, the developers. This is a series to highlight the people that are coding the companies of tomorrow and show the next generation of developers that opportunities await in their own backyard. Thanks for tuning in. What's going on, everybody? You got Evan Knowles and Justin Hall here from the Middletech podcast. We're sitting down with Stephen Van Wingerden, and it's going to be an awesome conversation. So this is actually the first episode of our Developer Deep Dive series as part of the Middletech podcast. And this is really special. What we're doing here, to give everybody background on what we're trying to accomplish, is we're trying to highlight developers in this region as rock stars, as the special people they are. One thing that we started to notice was, you know, developers don't get as much attention as we think they should. They're the ones building these companies that we highlight every week on the podcast. And so we wanted to give a little bit more of an inside look and a more deeper dive into who's actually building these companies. Oftentimes we sit down with the CEOs, and oftentimes they're the ones driving the vision, but there's a part of our audience that we know is interested in how to build these companies from a technical perspective. So we wanted to sit down with these people and explain exactly how that's done. So we've got Justin Hall, who we're very happy to be working with on this podcast. He's at Awesome Inc. running the bootcamp and is a very experienced developer and has done amazing things in this region. So we're happy to have Justin be a co-host of this. So Justin, I'll let you take it from here. And this is, again, an interview about development with Silver Fern Group, which Stephen is a co-founder of.
Yeah, so we're going to push off from the shore, go into some other undiscovered country here, and talk about some really cool things and see if we can find our way, or maybe even help somebody else find their way. So really exciting stuff. Yeah, as you mentioned, we're here with Stephen Van Wingerden, and he is the co-founder of Silver Fern, located in Lexington, Kentucky. Stephen brings computer science and operations skills to Silver Fern Group as a director of technology. He built RFID solutions for asset tracking and real-time replenishment software for over $125 million in annual sales of perishable goods with major retailers. When he's not solving system problems, he's studying the climatology and topography of places he's planning to visit. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Justin.
So to get us started, we can, you know, kind of have a little conversation here. And the way we do that is to see how we're connected. We kind of claim kin in a way.
We so do.
How did we come to know each other?
It's interesting. You know, we Awesome Inc. brought us together. It's probably the first time we had met. And learning after we had met at Awesome Inc., finding that your daughter plays volleyball for Bluegrass United. And interestingly, I played basketball for Bluegrass United probably 10 years ago now. It seems a lot more recent, but 10 years ago now. So, yeah, those are two ways that we know each other. So, yeah, no, and I appreciate that, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We just talked about that beforehand, too, so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how things are connected.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more background about you and maybe even, like, where you're from. So.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting question. Probably one that I don't even really know the answer to. part of that is, you know, growing up, we did quite a bit of moving. I think on an earlier podcast here at Middletech, my brother Adam was interviewed and talked and, you know, shared a bit about our life background. And growing up, we moved quite a bit before we settled here in Lexington, Kentucky. But I was born in Havre de Grace, Maryland, small town outside of Baltimore. And then we moved around the world, even to the opposite side in New Zealand. Wow. And that's a bit of where the name Silver Fern comes from. It's the national plant there. But here I am, you know, I'm now settled here in Lexington, Kentucky. And I could say, I guess I consider myself from here at this point.
Yeah.
So this is home, and I, you know, and I love it, and I'm glad that I'm here.
Yeah, you're making a big impact.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we're talking about is tech and tech stacks and people in the in software development, and you know, we're going to try to get an idea of kind of where you align or what you would connect to within tech, because tech is so big. There's all type of different avenues. And so I want to try to get the audience to understand a little bit of where you're coming from. So what would you best align with in the software development world?
I guess maybe the question would be more as, like, as far as what I do, what maybe my expertise might be.
Yeah.
You know, I consider myself probably an inventive developer, you know, partly because I'm self-taught. And, you know, one of the things I really enjoy is solving problems. Probably at the core of what I enjoy doing is solving problems. And I can do that with software development. So one of the things I do, you know, as inventive developers, you know, solving the problems resourcefully. I am a full stack developer. I think my strengths would lean more towards the back end development, primarily SQL. One of the first things I learned as I got into coding and, you know, been doing that for now almost 10 years. And that was kind of my exposure into the world of software development.
And so that's kind of what you do with Silverfern Group is managing development and working with backend systems?
Yeah. So that's a core of what I do, no doubt. I think at a very high level, what I do at Silverfern Group it is more than just that. I think we are all wearing a lot of hats, you know, with our team. We're a small team. We're a startup. One of the things that I like to do is, you know, myself and then our co-founders, we're really taking the vision that we have and kind of, you know, making sure that I'm pushing that direction, pushing that forward and following through with that vision. Yeah, on a daily basis, that does look a lot like development, but it doesn't necessarily always look like software development to a degree.
So. Understood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As a inventive developer, mm-hmm. I really like that term. How did you get your start? How did you become an inventive developer?
Man. Okay. So this is a great question, and I'd say I never thought that I would get into development, to be honest with you, in high school. Something that I, you know, I kind of had the aspirations of getting into accounting and finance. And, you know, I had plans heading off to college. That's what I was going to be. I was going to be an accounting major and go in that direction. The spring of my senior year, I was in dual enrollment at Asbury University, and I had an opportunity to work at my father's company, my dad's company. And like I mentioned earlier, I love to solve problems. It's one of the things that I, you know, particularly enjoy, and I always gravitate towards solving problems to help make other people's lives easier. And while I was working there, I came across many, many challenges that, you know, people were facing, that they were doing things in a pretty cumbersome way. And I wanted to make their lives easier. And, you know, I was thinking to myself, well, how do I do this? You know, what are some ways that I can automate what they're doing or make their tasks or their daily jobs easier? And that led into SQL development. You know, back-end jobs that I could run, you know, automatically schedule them and just kind of like really ease their burden. So that was my original start. And then from there, I saw that, hey, look, you know, I enjoy this. I see a bit of a skill I have here. And then so I started connecting with coworkers that were in the IT department, learning from them and, you know, really appreciate them helping fuel my start in that world. From there, it kind of led into a number of different things. I ended up going off to college, obviously changing to an information system computer science major. From there, I realized that, hey, I needed to go back into my family business with my dad. So I continued learning from a self-taught perspective, either going through massive open online courses, reading books, pretty much any book I could get my hand on. I'm sure you know how that is, being self-taught yourself. To watching YouTube videos and really honestly SureForce, that was one of the other ones, just saying, hey, look, just good old trial and error, which is probably the least recommended one, but definitely one of the ways that I started and to continue to learn. So
that's interesting that you saw an opportunity, you were self-taught problem solver, and then you went into a CS degree, and now you've kind of leveraged both of those experiences, really.
Yep.
And you kind of understand either one or both
yep.
require you getting your hands on the clay. You know, mm-hmm. you got to make the the changes and actually mm-hmm. apply it. That's great. That's wonderful. I really enjoy that, the path that you described there, because everybody kind of has their own path. We've realized that a lot of tech workers come from different places and their path isn't linear like you would expect. So it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. What was one of your biggest challenges going from self-taught into a CS degree? Was it, you know, like, was there a grind there that you had to go through? What was it like?
Oh man. So I didn't graduate with a CS degree, just to clarify on that. But I would say that going in right off the bat, you know, being self-taught, going into school, I actually found it quite easy, to be honest with you. Just from the perspective is that most of them were just one-on-one courses, you know, stuff that I had already had already gone through and had done.
And so, you were homeschooled.
And I was homeschooled.
So that doesn't surprise me one bit. You know, from homeschool into self-taught.
Yeah, that's really good. And I really appreciate the homeschool. And, you know, just to kind of pivot off that, what you just mentioned, one of the things that I really valued about being homeschooled was the self-discipline that it taught. You know, I find one of the greatest things that I learned, you know, having grown up, I'd gone to school for a bit, but being homeschooled most of my life was the discipline and just the self-discipline of being able to, you know, hey, making sure that I was, you know, teaching myself to a degree, particularly when it came into, you know, into high school. There was a lot of resources too that you could utilize. You had things like, you know, Khan Academy was coming out back then. I'm sure you guys heard of Khan Academy. So yeah, I mean, those type of resources, I was like, hey, I don't know how to do algebra 2. Well, Khan Academy, you know, go to it and figure it out. So being self-taught, I had already had an array of resources I knew to go to when I wanted to learn something new.
Very cool. So. Yeah. One of the things about homeschooling that just amazes me is how you really own your education. And if you're a self-taught developer, or even if you've gone through a boot camp, you really have to own that experience and that path. That's great. So we know you are director of technology at Silver Fern Group. But what is that like day to day?
You know, we're a startup, so I think I'm mixed in a number of different things. I think it would be kind of hard maybe on a day-to-day basis to answer that on a day-to-day basis, but maybe on a weekly basis, kind of if we just step up one more level, I could probably dive into that a little bit more. Approximately 50% of my time is spent on just developing our products, you know, continuing, you know, developing just, either by myself or with our team. Another 25% on DevOps. I'm sure we'll talk a bit about that, you know, a bit later. 15% on sales calls still. Probably my least favorite thing to do, but it's good. You know, I kind of getting that exposure. I know our products very well, having been, you know, during the development process. And then another 10%, you know, on other miscellaneous things, other managing the team, reviewing financials, anything to that level. And then just, you know, kind of helping build the culture. I think it's really important. You know, Adam has emphasized this. And
Adam's your brother.
Adam's my brother, yeah. And Kevin as well, both co-founders with me. And just making sure that we're continuing to uphold the culture that we describe and that we want. So that pretty much on a weekly basis sums it up.
Yeah, that's great. So you're a product development company. Yep. What is the product or one of the products you work with?
Yeah, so we have a suite of products. Pretty much what we do is we develop tools to help alleviate a lot of challenges that the horticulture, particularly you know, greenhouse growers that are providing big box retailers or major retailers like Lowe's and Home Depot, solving their day-to-day problems. So our suite of products range from pretty much anything from what we call lightweight MRP or, you know, manufacturing resource planning, all the way into the fulfillment and sales of that.
So when you say you have a whole suite of tools, you may have multiple tech stacks.
We do.
And
yes,
we do. I want to enter the word tech stacks into our discussion.
Yeah. So basically what we have as far as a suite of product goes is really comparable to like a Microsoft Office suite. And with that, we have desktop applications, we have web applications, we have mobile applications, and we even have some IoT devices. So yeah, our tech stack is a bit diverse, but there is some crossover among them. What it looks like a bit for desktop is, you know, we've got authentication and we use Firebase for that. In our customer's world, everyone pretty much uses Microsoft SQL Server. So that's pretty much our back end. And we don't really foresee moving away from that just because a lot of them want an on-prem solution. And given the fact that they already have that, we continue in developing with Microsoft SQL Server. And then from there, for the desktop side, we've got WPF, WinForms, basically C#.NET, deployed via ClickOnce and managed via Octopus deployment. And then on the web side, we've got GraphQL, which is our API layer, React, front end, which is what you guys, I think, primarily use in Bootcamp, which we really appreciate because it gives us a lot of opportunities,
Well, you've given me some ideas on what we probably need to add.
Yeah. So we love that because we do have someone on our team that came from the bootcamp, Hayden, and it's phenomenal knowing that he kind of just hit the ground running in a lot of areas because of that.
That's great.
And then as far as like source control, deployment, things like that, I mentioned Octopus, Bitbucket, we also use Bitbucket pipelines and stuff like that. Mobile apps follow pretty similar approach as far as what the tech stack looks like. And then IoT is a whole nother.
Yeah.
It would probably in a conversation for another time, just with embedded programming and firmware updates and such. So
that's really great. It sounds like it's very diverse, like you said.
Yep.
And the fact that you have knowledge or have touched all those is really good. I mean, it's impressive. But okay, let me ask you, Silver Fern Group. How do you position yourself in the market? What's your business model like?
So we consider ourselves software as a service, very niche though, because it's a very low volume, high value. A lot of what we do part of the why we do want to do software as a service is because a lot of our customers have been burned in the past by some of our competitors. And we want to make sure that we can offer a much less upfront costs into switching. So, to remove that, we want to, it'll be an ongoing cost, but a lot less of a switching cost. So really a business model is we're a niche software as a service, low volume. So we don't have a ton of customers, but a high value, particularly when they use a number of our products. And it's interesting how that gets priced. It's not necessarily just a monthly cost or a monthly charge to use one of our products. It's based off of how they perform and what their sales are. So it directly incentivizes us to help them perform as a company as well.
Yeah. So you're serving your clients by being able to provide a service through the suite of products.
Yep.
Okay, great. That's
wonderful. If I can give a bit of an example, one of our products is a replenishment product. And since most of our customers are dealing with perishable goods, they're delivering directly to the store. It's DSD, direct store delivery. So our replenishment product helps manage and replenish that product. So it takes in point of sale data from the retailer, either Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart, which we directly interface with. And then we evaluate that sales, those on hands, and then replenish that product. So how we're incentivized to help them grow is to increase their comp, to reduce their markdowns, reduce their shrink, increase their sales, things like that.
Very good. Okay, I want to kind of transition a little bit into this a little bit more loose discussion, I guess, about tech topics. There's so many out there. I would love to pick your brain and kind of understand, almost in a little bit of a game, I'm going to say something and I want you to tell me what it means to you. How you would define it based on your involvement and understanding. Because what I've realized is that there's a lot of tech people that come from different walks of life and solve different problems. And there are some similarities and differences in even how we define things.
Yep.
And
definitely.
So, yeah. And so I want to get everybody that comes on in this series, we're going to ask them these kind of questions and just see how it goes. So no pressure.
No pressure.
So I'm gonna bring up a tech topic or a term. You just kind of define it in your own words.
Okay.
So one that you mentioned already, DevOps.
Okay. I think of DevOps I guess a couple of different ways when I first hear it. You know, one, the combination of the development team and the operation, or the IT operation team, coming together, either as a person or even as a team of people. But I also see it as kind of like a set of practices combining both of them together. And often when I hear the word, or when I think of it, I'm thinking of CI/CD, continuous integration, continuous deployment, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to get the highest quality product to our customers as quickly and effectively as possible. And I see that as a responsibility of the DevOps team. I think what's important is that everyone on your team, when they think or hear of DevOps, it's kind of a culture or a mindset. Understanding, hey, well, what is this? What are we trying to accomplish in this practice here? Making sure that they are understanding of what it is, so that way we're all on the same page. So that way, when we're doing continuous, you know, integration, continuous deployment, as far as DevOps go, you know, we understand and we're moving forward in that direction.
Well, it's like you mentioned earlier, you're on the sales team too.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think everybody that's ever worked at a company kind of knows I do a little selling too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And if I can add one thing to it as well, one other piece to it is just the understanding, and there's always sometimes a gap here, is where you might have your operational team, not from just IT operations, but just as like from like the people who understand the product to the people who are developing the product. So it's just making sure too that there's nothing that gets lost in translation during that development process too. Taking what our customers need and what they want and making sure we're getting it developed properly. So new features and things to that degree as well.
Excellent. Ready for the next one?
I am.
Okay. Agile development.
Agile development. I would see this as a methodology or the practicing of a particular methodology. So kind of like I was talking a bit about with, you know, in CI/CD, we're trying to quickly get products, you know, quickly get updates out, you know, effectively the short life cycles. So when I think of agile development, you know, keeping those updates frequent, you know, that we're not going down and doing these sprints, which often turn into marathons for new updates. You know how that is. But what we're doing is we're taking shorter lifecycle updates and we're continually integrating and deploying them. They're going through unit testing, QA, and then out into production.
How much do you utilize that methodology?
we try to utilize it 100%. It's very, very important to us because, you know, we want to identify bugs as quickly as possible. And when you go through these, what I call, you know, sprints or marathons, or maybe even more of a waterfall approach development, you have the potential for more bugs to enter during the development phase and they don't get identified as quickly.
So you identify them quickly and you get a feedback loop that helps you deliver and serve your customers to make your suite better.
Exactly.
Okay. So I got another one. Continuing education.
Continuing education. Well, I feel like that one's a little bit self-explanatory. I would say, you know, some of the things that I've done as far as continuing education, kind of what I think about this, you know, just in life in general, I always want to learn. I think it's, you know, kind of making sure that everyone on our team has that desire to learn. In that perspective, it might be attending events or conventions as far as like the continuing education might go. Like I went to SQL Saturday when it was in Cincinnati. Encouraging the team. I think now, even during with COVID, most of these are online resources. We use GraphQL, like I described earlier, as one of our, as part of our tech stack. You have the GraphQL Summit coming up. You know, hey, let's attend the GraphQL Summit as far as continuing education. Maybe even getting a part of, you know, doing things like hackathons or dev days and things like that. As a part of all just continuing education.
Yeah. Before COVID, and I think before you guys became a part of the Awesome Inc. family, there was a sort of a TechX local engagement that we had with the different tech communities. And the discussion started to creep into, okay, yeah, we need more of this. We need other things to kind of build this up. And I think when we get hopefully back into some kind of normalcy that we could hopefully pick that back up.
I would love that. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, you don't ever want to get stuck into your, you know, your one mind track type of thing. And then it's interesting, you know, that's part of, like I was telling Evan just before we got in here, I like to do a daily walk. And one of the things is at any one point, it's obviously it's got health benefits, but it also helps, you know, kind of help my mind and just like process certain things where, hey, people get reader's block. Oh, I get, you know, I get developer's block.
Yeah.
And like, hey, let me just go on a 15-20 minute walk, open up my mind, you know, help think, break through solutions. But at the same time, if you get a community of people like that where you come across challenges or you get stuck at one point, to be able to go to TechX, continue, bring those challenges that you're having and bring them to other people and kind of have a community like that. I would love that.
Excellent. So I've got a couple more.
Okay.
And these two terms, I've got them listed separately in my little notes here, but really it's kind of the same. So local talent, local workforce. What do you think about that?
Interesting. I think, you know, from the local workforce perspective, you know, so far at Silver Fern Group, we've hired entirely locally. And I really appreciate what Awesome Inc. has done as developing that local community and creating local talent. And I definitely want to, you know, bring them to light because that's been awesome. And, you know, what you've done for the boot camp has been incredible. And like I said, I mentioned earlier, we've got Hayden from the boot camp. And I do appreciate the having that local talent, that local workforce here, because I think although we can work all remotely and we can be all across the globe technically working, it is really nice to have that face-to-face time and engage on a level different than just over Zoom or over Microsoft Teams or whatever.
Yeah.
And part of that is not necessarily just from a work perspective, but even from a personal perspective. You know, we want to get to know our employees, our local talent, and we want to get to, you know, engage with them on a level beyond just work. And I know you had some questions, I think, a little bit later on possibly about that, and I won't say too much to that regard because I'll save some thoughts here in a moment.
That's so good. So let's take a detour then. We'll get back to some of those. So you mentioned you work for a product-driven company. How did the company arrive at some of the current tech stacks? You did mention, you know, most of your customers. So you're trying to meet your customers where they are with a Microsoft blend. But what were some of the other ones and how did they transpire?
Well, okay, a couple of things. I'll give it a little bit of a story, maybe a little bit of a background on how we came to this. So myself and one of our employees, Scott, he and I worked together at our previous company. And, you know, what we did was, you know, we had a lot of challenges with the tech stack we were using there. So I guess, you know, we knew what we didn't want to some degree just because of that. And we were still very Microsoft, you know, centric, partly because we're in the business world and, you know, it seems that a lot of people in the business world are so Microsoft driven. One of the challenges that we came across was we had, you know, what we call Dev SQL Server. And, you know, we use that purely for development purposes, right? And what we found out is just with the lack of a proper agile development process, our Dev SQL quickly became a production SQL server. And we just basically weren't, it was just like, hey, we bypassed this whole deployment process and it just became, our production database.
Yeah.
And obviously that opened up for a ton of potential errors. So what we really liked with, you know, GraphQL was one of the things that we had chosen. Some of the versioning that they offer, we really liked the fact, we could really define within from the front end side how we have a different either C# desktop application or even a React web app or even a mobile app. We could prevent overfetching, underfetching. We could define our queries exactly what we had wanted. And it really helped solve a lot of problems instead of creating a RESTful API like we had done in the past. And then as far as why we chose to continue with WPF WinForms on the C#.NET side was a hard decision, I think, largely because, we see everything headed towards the web. Mm-hmm. But a lot of our customers, you know, they're really familiar with Microsoft Office. And they primarily use Microsoft Excel to solve a lot of the problems that we're solving for them. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to mitigate the learning process for them, take away that learning curve and reduce it. So that kind of led us to say, hey, look, what we'll do is we'll have basically, you know how you have Microsoft Excel desktop and Microsoft Excel online? Yeah, that's pretty much the way we're headed, is we have both a desktop and a web version of the same product. And what it's doing is we foresee over the years, as we transition to move everything to the web, what we're going to do is we're going to be able to train them to come with us.
Yeah.
And you know, so hey, what we're doing is we're replacing their current Microsoft Excel solution with a product that looks and feels very similar, accomplishes the job tremendously better. And then what we'll do, you know, is, hey, offer them that web version. So that's kind of how the whole tech stack came together.
Yeah.
And what challenges do you kind of expect to have coming up? I mean, you've got a wide array. There's some things there that you're saying, okay, we want to move. We know where, you know, some of the industry's moving. How do you get from where you are now and past those challenges and hurdles?
Great question. You know, I'm not a particular fan of some of the WinForm desktop, you know, or WPF stuff. You know, Microsoft's moving to UWP with a lot of the stuff. There's a potential they might deprecate certain things. That's a kind of a concern that I have. I don't think it's going to happen within the next, you know, 5 years, but it could happen, you know, sooner rather than later. Some of the things I see, you know, is that from a user experience perspective, how do we accomplish what we have done on the desktop side and bring it over to the web without losing any type of like capabilities or features? So that would be a bit of a concern, you know, as we're using, you know, on-prem solutions with a desktop app. We've got a great speed, and we can utilize a lot more of the local machines resources than you do with the web. But maybe with WebAssembly and a lot of newer technologies coming out, I think that might change.
So when you look at that, it's a lot of onboarding of new things. It's iterative. It's changing.
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep up with the changes from like a point of view of like what we just talked about, the local developer, the talent that you're seeking to be able to, you know, to kind of harness those tech stacks? Are you going to have a lot of growth coming up, or is it pretty much just you and maybe your team right now?
No, we do, and we hope to have a lot of growth coming up, particularly as we continue to expand the products more to the web and into the mobile world. So we have a lot of, pretty much with our existing customer base, I feel like our current team is pretty much at capacity. And if we want to grow with more customers, we're going to need to bring on more people to
so,
help it.
So having said that, what could the local tech ecosystem be doing better to support your developers or what you think is a developer?
So when you say that, you mean how can like the local team of people here?
Yeah, like Awesome Inc. And you've got Base 110. You've got several different places. And then you've got the local tech community. You've got Bluegrass Developers Guild, where there's a network. There's several of those packets. What could we be doing, or what could the local tech ecosystem look like for you to better support your tech stack and your ongoing efforts?
I know we talked about this once before. GraphQL was one of the things that I was like, hey, we should introduce that into the boot camp. I'd love that.
Yes.
You know, and then I see too, as far as backend development, you know, Microsoft SQL Server, I don't foresee that going away. Azure's becoming, you know, a huge part of the cloud world. And then also a bit of talking about microservices. You know, I don't know if I'm getting a little bit too far into some of the potential of what the boot camp or what places like that could be teaching the local environment. But like, hey, let's get into microservices, helping them understand what those are. You know, maybe possibly going through something like GraphQL as a replacement of RESTful API. Yeah.
We see that there's like a little bit of a battle right now going on for developers. So when you start looking at Microsoft and their vertical, right, with Azure, you get Visual Studio Code, whatever, and you're buying into that and it's good. And then, you know, you kind of move up the stack and you get into the Azure world and now you're a Microsoft developer. Same thing with Google Cloud. Same thing with Amazon, AWS. So we're trying to stay in that a little bit of an agnostic kind of way so that, you know, we're preparing them to go into the workforce as sort of ready to pivot.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I like that. So your tech stack, it seems like it's grown and very diverse,
mm-hmm.
but there's some core fundamentals there that looks like the local tech ecosystem, especially the people that generate like Yosemite, the bootcamp mm-hmm. Developers could look towards and possibly adopt. So having discussed a little bit of this ecosystem, what are they doing well right now in regards to you as a developer and Silver Fern Group?
One of the things, you know, like I'd mentioned, you know, we do use React. And I really think coming out, a lot of these guys, they're excellent front end developers. They're really, that's kind of maybe, and that's what I'm seeing at least, is a lot of their core, you know, is like, hey, they're understanding, they get that, and they can really do that well. So I appreciate that because it's really alleviating a lot of burden on my side. It's helpful too that they, you know, coming out, there's really no learning curve from that perspective, is they can hit the ground running. And I talked a bit about that with Hayden. So I do really appreciate, I think they're doing that well. The other thing I think is quite interesting, outside of just a development, is that each one of these guys I'm seeing coming out are very professional people. I think that they're being taught beyond just a development skill, but just to be professional individuals. How to act and work within within that type of environment. And I really, really appreciate that. Because often that could be a more challenging thing to be taught, you know? So, you know, I've seen, and I've been able to just working out of here, you know, just out of the Awesome Inc., as part of the fellowship program, seeing that each one of these individuals coming out, they're very professional.
Excellent.
And I think that I, seen their either through LinkedIn profiles, either talking with them, and just how they engage with me.
I want to paint a picture here because you mentioned React and front-end development, and what we're kind of talking about in some other circles and discussions that I've been having is, how do you identify, or what would you say would be a measurement for a front-end developer? And so we kind of have one. I want to see what you think about it. Would a measurement for a front-end developer be something like, okay, I give you the mock-up or the
wireframe
and you nail it. You know, you do it to spec, you've got user experience and UI considerations, defensive programming, all those mm-hmm. things to really make that front end hum. Would you agree with that? Or
I definitely would agree with that. One of the things that we really try to instill also at Silver Fern is give a bit of what we call creative liberty. So I really want to make sure, as well as a front end developer, that they're not just following, because 1080 degree, you know, your wireframe may not be perfect. There may be things that are missed. So I want to make sure that along the way that they have a bit of creative liberty. And that's something that we encourage at Silver Fern, is like, hey, we'll put these together. And, you know, we have ideas and thoughts, but making sure that along the way they may see areas for improvements or areas that we may have missed during the process, and giving them that creative liberty. So that's something I do personally. And I know that as we're continuing with the front end developer, is like, hey, you work on these wireframes, you work on these mockups, and you show them, hey, this is what we want. And what I see as a metric of someone who's a really great front end developer is when they come out and they even exceed those expectations by taking those creative liberties and putting some of those things in place.
I think that's a great measurement to be able to follow, and then also to be able to inform.
Mm-hmm.
And say, hey, this may not work this way.
Yeah.
It could work this way better. Yeah, I think that's great. And plus, you're listening. So that says a lot about your company and you as management. So a couple other questions, and then I want to go into a little bit more about the Lexington tech scene in general. But what would you consider traits of a high quality senior developer and junior developer? Do you have some ideas in mind and how you do that at Silver Fern? Or
yeah, we do. I have some personal ones probably, and you know, some of those things we're still trying to, you know, as a startup, we're still trying to identify at Silver Fern, and we're making sure that we identify them, and we're connecting with each one of our employees, and we're talking about those metrics and certain things that they can reach to identify, hey, what makes you a developer or senior developer? One thing that we don't do is we don't really necessarily call anyone a junior developer. That's one of the things that we try to omit from the title. Not that necessarily I don't want to say use the word degrading by any means, but I think everyone's a developer. And then at certain points, based on these certain metrics that you described and ones that we have as well internally, you become and you move up to the next level of maybe a senior developer. But, you know, at any one point when you come up, you know, come to our team, you start off right away as just a developer. Mm-hmm. And that's important to us. You know, I think, you know, self-esteem plays a role into, you know, hey, they have to be confident in what they're doing. And that plays a big role in how they're going to perform. And, you know, everyone's different. And, you know, a lot of times what I find, what we've seen in some of these younger developers is they may feel a little bit, you know, they might not feel confident in what they're doing. They may have the right answer, but they may feel a little bit insecure in telling you or who they might feel as, you know, a senior dev, what that they think the answer is. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure, you know, we identify and say, look, never be afraid to make mistakes, you know, as a young developer. So we omit the junior from developer altogether. You're just a developer. And then, you know, obviously, as they start to break through on certain things, becoming more confident, we start identifying these metrics and these traits that make them a senior developer. And these are some certain things that we're still working through here at Silver Fern. But yeah, we have those. And anyway. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great description, and I think it says a lot about your company of not having really a specific title, because what is it? Is it lines of code? Is it hours of QA? Is it, you know, ownership? It sounds to me like there's a little bit of all of that mm-hmm. that you kind of consider. So I think it's really important as a tech company, you know, to kind of develop your own metrics. Sounds like you're doing that. You're putting mm-hmm. it together and understanding, you know, how to have good quality developers and how to grow them.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we definitely have, you know, and like you mentioned, you know, whether it be lines of code or not, that's not necessarily what we want to define as a maybe a senior developer. But no doubt, as people grow, as they get the experience, one of the challenges that we find definitely is the domain knowledge within our particular area. You might be the most senior developer come on board, but have zero domain knowledge of what we're trying to produce. And that's a big challenge as well. Making sure the developers understand what we're doing, because we're providing a product for a particular industry. It's not necessarily project-based all the time. And we find that getting them to understand that domain knowledge becomes quite a bit of a challenge too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've only got a few more minutes left, and so all I want to do is just kind of follow up on a few questions and finish mm-hmm. strong. So which Lexington community of developers are you involved with? How are the communities supportive?
So, unfortunately, we're not involved with some of these ones you have listed here. Awesome Inc. is one, and, you know, I really appreciate the Awesome Inc. Fellowship program that we were able to become a part of back in August. And one of the things that I really appreciate about them is not necessarily from a tech perspective, but from a culture perspective, what they've been able to provide. You know, Brian Rainey has had a number of conversations, as well as Keith McNunn, with my brother Adam and Marcells, and they've really helped us, you know, as far as building that culture that we want to have at Silver Fern. And that's been a huge thing because, you know, that's really important to us to make sure that, you know, we put that culture, you know, first in a lot of areas. So I appreciate that. As far as, you know, Lexington community, that's probably one of the only ones we engage with. We do a lot of outside Lexington, but maybe not so much internal into Lexington.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there's definitely room for you to grow in some mm-hmm. ways and connect. The Bluegrass Developer Guild, which I'm a part of, I highly recommend, and several others. But so with that said, and we got a couple other questions, like what do you think Lexington can do to improve? You mentioned before about the, you know, having more tech conferences or having more kind of
dev days
and hackathons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think, definitely, especially once COVID, you know, starts to hopefully alleviate, we can start doing that again. And even if it's just, you know, through something like Zoom or Microsoft Teams, I think that would be a phenomenal thing to add. You know, one of the things, encouraging maybe some younger people getting involved, getting maybe some more like high school people, involved in coding and developing, just getting them engaged earlier. I see a lot of the people here at the boot camp, you know, are surprisingly post college. How do you bring them in to realize that, hey, this is something they want to do before that? That would be something that I would love to see in the community. I do think Awesome Inc. is doing an incredible job with the boot camp. I love that. Let's see. Little disconnected, maybe. I mean, I don't know if it's just because we're a smaller community. Like I said, I would love to be, like you mentioned a few, Bluegrass Guild. How can we connect? And is there a way to connect a little bit more easily?
Yeah, we seem to have little pockets.
Yeah.
And hopefully not clans, but mm-hmm. little pockets that could connect a little bit better, I think, overall. And then also, you know, I think, like you mentioned, there's some things missing that people need to own. And I think it would be great to see bold and creative investments and, you know, like to help other startups, especially ones that are going through the fellowship.
Yeah.
And then other tech startups. We've seen, I think, in the fellowship, more tech startups grow. And that could, when I say that, and you're a tech startup, it's not to kind of emphasize the competitiveness, but it's more like a co-opetition, I guess you could say,
yeah.
where, you know, because as other tech startups grow and even some that, you know, start up and fail, you're going to have talent that's going to need to pivot and move to other places. And that just makes our tech community better in some way. So
yep. One other thing I was thinking of, you know, while you were saying that was potentially apprenticeship type programs, mentor programs. And maybe there are some that exist that I don't know about, but I'd love to see, you know, a bit of that. Hey, look, can younger developers coming out of the boot camp or coming out of college, can they find good mentors or people that they can, you know, work under and learn under?
Absolutely.
You know, you find that a lot in when they get into a company, they usually work under a senior developer or something like that, and they learn quite a bit that way.
Surprisingly, Lexington has, I wouldn't say an aged development community, but we definitely have an experienced one with, you know, Lexmark. You've got IBM. There are all kinds that were stationed in and around here. That I've been able to work with, and I can definitely see how these experienced developers could come out, maybe even be a part or even host their own apprenticeship within
yep.
Within their company, and it would be a huge boom, really.
Oh, I definitely think so. You know, I know I would probably do that myself, and I would encourage people on our team to do that. Definitely.
That's great. So we've talked about a couple of things, bold and creative investments, apprenticeships, anything else like, you know, the difference between maybe informed tech buyers and uninformed tech buyers, entrepreneurs, stakeholders, those kind of people that are infusing different things and qualities within the tech community for tech startups like yourself to take advantage of. Do you see anything in along those lines that you'd like to close us out with?
You know, I can't really speak from the Silver Firm perspective as far as, you know, trying to find a buyer for anything to that degree or even raise outside capital. And that'd probably be a question more for Kevin on the finance side and stuff like that. He, you know, he's one of the co-founders and that's probably more up his alley. So I probably wouldn't be able to comment to any, to that regard. But I do see and I hear, and I think that that's doing decently well here in the Lexington community.
Yeah, so. Great. Well, you know, I want to wrap this up. I love this analogy of a hero kind of starting off on their path with a destination unknown and having the insight to kind of to stop an experienced hero on their way back from their destination and asking the question, what question should I ask you before I begin on my journey? So let's pretend our listeners are starting off on their path and you are the hero returning. Any wisdom you want to impart, what question should they be asking?
Okay. Interesting. I guess without knowing the journey, and if I just make some assumptions on what the journey was, what I would probably say, you know, in thinking of this perspective as, you know, coming out of maybe a tech career, even as we finish out our tech startup and we become more of a firm company, one of the questions that I would tell them that they should ask would be, how do I balance my personal life and my work life? And why is that important along the journey? You know, I see that this is important, particularly for myself. You know, when I'm most productive at work is when I'm engaging on things that I enjoy personally in my personal life. So, you know, one of the things that I, you know, I might like to do, what makes me tick is, hey, I want to make sure I'm engaging in some type of physical activity, whether it's sports, whether it's being out in nature on hikes. For some people, it's reading. For other people, it's attending a social event. And I know when people are really engaging that on the personal level, it carries into a productive work life. If they're really not, if they're not having a good personal life balance, they're probably not going to be performing at work. So along their new journey, make sure you find time to engage in the things that are important to you on a personal level. You know, I also, you know, my faith, like I described to you earlier, you know, that's important to me. So, hey, when I find, and someone just had spoken to me about this, that works for us, is like, hey, and this is very valuable for us at Silver Fern. You know, we want to make sure that we allow all of our team members that time to engage in what's important for them personally. And one of our team members was telling us, like, look, my mornings are important to me because when I wake up, I want to have, you know, my time, my devotional, because if I don't have my devotional in the morning, it sets my entire day off. So if we don't allow them to have that devotional in the morning, you know, they're not going to come into work able to engage and be able to be the most productive person that they can be. So, you know, we want to make sure, and I think it's important that as they go on their journey, that they know what's important to them beyond just work. So,
Stephen, thank you for your time and insight. We appreciate your contributions to the tech community and the impact Silver Fern Group is making as part of the Awesome Inc. Fellowship. Middle Tech listeners, thank you for your time, and please leave us with your feedback. We're going to continue this discussion and have guests on like Stephen in the next few episodes. We hope you take part in the discussion with us and continue to listen as we learn more and deep dive deeper into similar topics that we discussed today. I'm Justin Hall, lead instructor of Awesome Inc.'s Web Developer Bootcamp and Middle Tech supporter. See you in a bit.